Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Middle Eastern Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Turo Mende, the host of the channel. Today, we'll be talking to Nora Parr about her book, Novel Palestine, Nation Through the Works of Ibrahim Nasrallah. Thank you for being on the podcast, Nora.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Maybe we can start with a question like, how did you become a research fellow and how was your journey coming to this place where you are right now?
We'll try for a short answer. So actually, the book project and the questions that initiated the book project actually brought me very directly to my second project, which is more on questions of trauma and translating trauma. Because by and large, in the first project, I found the existing literature insufficient for helping me unpack what was happening. And so I just piled up enough questions from the first one that it was an easy route from the book project to where I am now. And I'm a research fellow at the University of Birmingham on a large sort of research network project. I work on the Palestine case study and work with an organization in North Central Gaza, or that they were in North Central Gaza. And we had been and are continuing to work with them on sort of helping document work that they do on the ground on sort of trauma and mental health. So that's taken up a lot of time much more recently, very sadly, but we're still working with them. And it's, you know, for me, it's to get a sense of how these sort of concepts of trauma and the literary theories, how that actually plays out. For me, that's a kind of element of ethical research where you're working with theory, but it's so close to practice, and the questions of understanding what trauma means in a text has real world implications. So trying to get a sense of what that meant on the ground brought me to work with the Palestine Trauma Center and then to work with this big project at Birmingham. And so that's where I am now.
Great. And when did the idea of the book Novel Palestine first emerge, and how did it become a book as it is now?
Well, so it started off as PhD research, which emerged from MA research. So it all is somehow a connected chain. From MA research, I came across intertextuality theory. I mean, I think the first question was, why does so many texts in Arabic just cite Shakespeare? Why is he everywhere? And like, what's happening? And how do I describe it? How do I understand it? And that led me down a giant long wormhole that brought me out of academia into news media in Palestine, and then back to novels and literature. And I was using the question of intertextuality and the interreferencing of texts to unpack questions of nation and national belonging and sort of how intertextuality lets you move across different sorts of boundaries and how that kind of creates a certain model of being and belonging in the world in Palestinian texts.
And coming to the title of the book, what do you mean exactly by Novel Palestine? How did it ended up to be this title?
Oh, the title changed several times during the course of between submitting a proposal and having a book come out. It was initially Nation Constellation. An idea emerged within the writing that Palestine is imagined as a constellation. And there was quite a bit of interest in developing that as a model. And then with that, actually, literature doesn't really give models in the political science sense. So we scaled that back a little bit. But the title now, Novel Palestine, you know, it's a nice play on novel as in new and novel as in literary fiction, and just something that is that this idea that fiction can and does continually generate new ways of seeing and thinking, and that we can read fiction and learn to see the world a little differently.
And how does the research landscape look like in your case concerning Novel Palestine? How does it fit in the current the scholarly landscape?
There's been a lot written on Palestine and a lot of short works written on article length stuff written on Palestine and Palestinian literature. Fewer monographs more recently. Joe Farag and Maurice Albellini are two scholars who have come out with quite substantial works on Palestine and Palestinian literature. So I like to see it as a new bump in scholarly production, and hopefully part of a wave that is taking especially contemporary Palestinian writing quite seriously. There had been, of course, a lot of work on the canonical authors, but a bit of a lag in taking seriously more contemporary works and fitting them within the wider trajectory of Palestinian texts, rather than sort of seeing it all as a split. And so I think contemporary scholars are now doing a much better job of taking the corpus of Palestinian writing seriously, including, of course, Palestinian writing in languages other than Arabic. But Brahim Nasrallah obviously writes in Arabic. And so trying to keep Arabic, the Arabic writing of Palestine, sort of very firmly central in thinking about Palestinian fiction.
And you talked about the canon, and you worked on Ibrahim Nasrallah. Is he part of the canon as an official part, or how is he looking?
So probably officially not, but maybe yes by now. Canons are very slow to accept and adopt new authors. As he himself has said, right, he was born after 1948. And to get included in the canon, almost the way the canon has formed and the way criticism formed, it's difficult to make it in if you're of a later generation, even if by not even a decade. So I'd like to think that as the canon expands and as we have a wider definition of what canon is, that he'll make it in there. He's certainly a very important contemporary author, probably one of a very small handful of like most important contemporary writers. But he's still writing, so we'll see what is yet to come.
And you divided your book in three parts. How do they come basically together, and how does each part stand for, or can they be read like separated, or how are they connected with each other?
Oh, well, the game of the book, so the work and intertextuality, right? It means everything's overlapping and everything references all the other things. So trying to find an order of operations, and the introduction just kept being a million pages because I felt you have to sort of get everything out so that you can start somewhere, but you could never really start anywhere. So the way that it is now sort of goes from most sort of setting out terms and reference points and what does intertextuality mean when we talk about Palestine. And so it starts sort of from a level of like describing the form and how does it work from sort of the most basic looking at intertextuality and thinking about Palestine as a series. So the work looks at Ibrahim Nasrallah's two series of novels, The Palestine Comedies and The Balconies. And it says, okay, the most basic form here is thinking about, he writes The Palestine Comedies. And if we think about The Palestine Comedies as a series and Palestine as a series, what does that do for us? And so it starts out with sort of one series primarily, and works through the kind of theoretical implications or sort of thought experiment implications of what does it mean if we think Palestine or the national novel as a series rather than one kind of closed, bounded text? And what does this do for how we used to talk about the national novel, which of course has largely gone out the window as this like prerequisite for good, important fiction from the Middle East. But there's big baggage around the national novel. And so it was nice to kind of have a chance to talk about why that imposed so many limitations on talking about and imagining Palestine and the kind of creative possibilities that emerged with Nasrallah's Palestine comedies and seeing even sort of all of Palestinian literature as a kind of a series and a thing that expresses Palestine as a nation well beyond the sort of bounded text of the single novel. And so that's where it starts and then goes on to the middle section is perhaps the least straightforward and looks at how within an intertextual nation where power works in there. In the novel, powers and structures of power are often sort of embedded in narrative structures. And if we take all of those away, well, where do they go? Because they don't disappear. As much as it's nice to think about a Palestine that is everywhere and all places, and all the places have meaning and the people have meaning, but actually those places and people are subject to structures of power. And how does this system account for it? And so the second section, Seeing, Telling, Power, looks at some of the narrative structures that help make those powers visible, right? The power that makes sure you need to narrate in a straight line chronologically. And if you're using flashbacks, they still have to fit in some sort of chronological thing. Otherwise, it's a fragmented, uncompleted narrative. And all those the things that we tend to read with unconsciously, when they come out of their sort of binding, where do they go and what do they look like? And so it looks at primarily his second series, the balconies, and looks at the metaphor of the balcony. What does it mean to stand up, but also inside and outside, right? So it looks a little bit at kind of Foucault's panopticon, but from this kind of inside outside where you can see the structures and you're in them, but you also have a little bit of distance outside. And so it uses this to talk about how Palestinian writing, especially the novel, right, which has its long sort of legacies of cross-linguistic, cross-cultural, cross-power system heritage, and how the novel can be used to narrate this experience, but also reflect on its own kind of power structures and the things that the novel as a genre is embedded in. The balcony became a really useful tool to help describe what was happening in the texts around the description and the sort of taking account of all these power structures and seeing them and showing what they do, but also not letting those structures dictate the sort of parameters of Palestine.
Thank you so much, Nora. And can you tell us a bit more about the series? Like, when did they first emerge and how popular are they among the readers and how they are connected with each other, maybe?
Sure. The two book series, the first chapter talks a little bit about the history of the two series, because the first book of the first series was never the first book of the first series. The series was inaugurated when the second novel came out, and the first one was then retroactively labeled as part of the series, kind of further making difficult this idea of linearity, right, and a singular origin. So the history of the series is delightfully complex, and we have books. There was a book, Arwah Kilimanjaro, Souls of Kilimanjaro, that came out from Bloomsbury, Qatar, I believe, and isn't formally part of the series. It's from a different publisher as all the other books, but Nasrallah himself says, oh no, it's part of the series, but doesn't have the title on the side, doesn't have any of the sort of paratextual elements. And so, you know, even if you know, what makes a series, right? Is it the name on the spine? Is it the publisher? How do you understand the limits of something? And so it the works started to be the first book that is claimed in the series was published in 96, but then later he added an earlier work to it. So much later, I mean, in the late 2010s, he added an earlier novel. So the history of the series, when it was started as an idea, when it was sort of founded on the spine of the texts, and then as it's grown, it has produced, you know, far more. As I started the writing, he kept coming out. Every time I would go to press print on whether it was the submission of the PhD or sending the draft into the publishers, I would be like, well, hold on, he's published another one. And so I would have to update all of the charts. And eventually I had to sort of draw a line and say, okay, I can't fit any more books in. But the series is also ongoing. And so there is no official beginning and certainly as yet no official end to the Palestine comedies. The Balconies is a little now slower to continue, but still is an open kind of text. And so they're delightfully ambiguous in their chronologies. And the texts cover unknown speculative futures. Dog War 2 came out, which won the IPAF award as part of the Balconies. And it is set in an unknown future. And we also have the earliest is Lanterns of the King of Galilee, which is set in sort of the early mid-Ottoman period. And so the time of the two series is vast, and the texts don't come out in any particular order. And they rarely treat the same physical location, certainly not the same kind of geotemporal location. So it really is this idea of Palestine as its most vast in concept. And so it is fantastically interesting and entertaining. And there's historical fiction, there's stream of consciousness. The genres of text included within the series is also vast. So there's sort of something for everybody. Most readers have read at least one. There are some complaints now that he writes too much. But then when we're thinking about if this is a thing that is supposed to tell the story of Palestine, is there such a thing as writing too much? But, you know, everyone's going to criticize for something, which just means you have an engaged readership.
You talked about this a bit already, but what are the topics of the novels mostly, or what is he talking about in the novels? What is important to him in his writings?
In the Palestine comedies, I think it's safe to say that it talks about the people and their experiences in place. So we have texts from Jordan in the 60s and 70s. We have texts from Ottoman Palestine in Time of White Horses. We have texts from the Second Intifada in Gaza and in Ramallah, in Gaza Weddings, which has been translated by Nancy Roberts, and Under the Mid-Morning Sun, which should be translated because I think it's one of my favorites. We have also, I mean, there are so many. I think we don't have a text specifically on Jerusalem, which is interesting. And I think I was at a book talk in Ramallah more than 10 years ago now, and someone asked, right, where's your novel about Jerusalem? And Nasrallah's reply was along the lines of, well, they're all a little bit about Jerusalem, because every when we talk about any point of Palestine, we're talking about all of them. But he also, it's, you know, difficulties in visiting. And then the last I was aware, he refused to apply for entry permits to access Jerusalem. So I know he writes about locations that he feels he can know. So that might be a reason, but maybe there's one forthcoming. So you can never say the limits of what the texts talk about. Yes. Also, Lebanon in the sort of the 70s and 80s. It's it really covers a vast vast conceptual network of sort of locations of Palestine.
And there are only a few works, I think two or three now, was published in English by him. How were there any difficulties for you to translating parts of his novels for your research, or what kind of characteristics did you come across while translating him?
So he's, in terms of writing style, he is by and large not overly difficult. He's not, I mean, I've also translated bits by like Jabri Ibrahim Jabra, which is just like a whole other kettle of fish. Nasrallah, and there are difficulties in form and sort of some of his more stream of consciousness writing I found difficult to translate because the language was so slippery. And it was meant to be slippery. So especially when you're trying to pull things into English, you have to pin things down that aren't necessarily pin downable across languages. So that was difficult. But by and large, his language is quite straightforward. It's lovely. It's very powerful language, but it's not overly complicated for the reader. Especially compared to some other contemporary authors, so it wasn't a bad experience in translation. Things would sometimes move slowly because he does also use kind of so folklore or expressions that I hadn't come across yet. So I'd have to sort of stop and ask around. And there's I don't know what the ages of your listeners are, but there was one where he talks a lot about birds. Birds are everywhere. And there was a fight between school kids, and the one kid calls another kid and says that he has a hamama. And I was like, why is it bad that he has a little bird? And of course, that is slang for young male genitalia, which I didn't know. So I had to ask around and made some of my lovely colleagues sort of blush by asking about some of the references. But so it's the colloquialisms, the things that I had not come across as a woman going through the world and learning Arabic as an adult. But yeah, I mean, and it's good fun. In the process of translating and unpacking the language, you always learn more and go deeper into the texts. So all of the sort of the difficulties in translation and interpretation were a really fun excuse to learn more.
Thank you so much, Nora. And looking at his career, like what kind of impact does his writings have on Palestine and the region in general?
It's a big question. It's also a tricky question now. He's written some absolutely heartbreaking poetry of and around Gaza, and is very active as a contemporary writer, and obviously very invested and concerned with what is going on, as we all are. I think his impact on the region. He's also going back to your question about canon. He's sort of too young to be in the canon, but he's also one of the sort of senior literary figures in Palestine. And I think because he is so active, and he's also very active as a writer. He does a lot of traveling and speaking. And he also does a lot of sort of visiting reading groups in the region, and is just a very active promoter of reading. And I think, he cites one of the reasons he wrote was because, it was said that people might, if he didn't write it, people might forget. He said, no, we'll never forget, and I'll write it and I'll keep writing it. And so just he being so active and being so supportive, I think is important in sort of literature generally. But having that sort of, being so personable and warm, and I think he was a lovely person too. I had the opportunity to meet him several times, and he actually came. I gave my first talk in Jordan post PhD, and he came to the talk, and I remember being so nervous. Hopefully I've done it well. Hopefully I present it well. And it was my first like 45-minute talk, and he sat down with me. He's like, "You're gonna do great." It was just so wonderful and encouraging for me as a scholar. And there I should have been proving my worth to him. And he's like, "You're doing great." And as always, read the work and rarely comments and says, this is fantastic. I love it. And is very supportive to me and, as I understand it, to other scholars. So I think having that presence in the literary sphere is can only be good things.
Yes, I think so too. And in one chapter, you talk about Al-Muthanna, how it is connected to Nasrallah's works. Can you tell us a bit about what does it mean, and to those who doesn't know about it?
Sure. So while the works of the Palestine Comedies and the Balcony series are incredibly different in style, in topic, in character, in setting, there are themes that run through all of them. And Al-Muthanna, it's the Arabic grammatical principle of the dual. So for two things, I imagine many of your listeners know what this is, but for those who don't, it's the grammar by which you can say two lips, two eyes, two arms, two people, two lovers. So it's used quite a bit in poetry to denote that you have that there are two of something or a pair of something, and also works to express that they are two, but they are one sort of functioning thing, right? You hug with two arms; that is different than a one-armed hug. You kiss with two lips; it is a single function, or two things operating to create something larger than themselves, like a pair of lovers that they create a sort of thing beyond the two individuals. And Nasrallah, in his works, mobilizes this idea of two and one quite frequently, and the most obvious moment of it is sort of the textual history of Gaza Weddings and Under the Mid-Morning Sun, which initially were published as a single volume. They both treat the time period of the Second Intifada, and one happens in Gaza City, and the second is in Ramallah. And afterwards, they were published separately with no mention that they were ever published together. And what, is it one story of the Intifada across two locations? Or is it, and both, of course, both works also have Gaza Weddings, has a set of twins inside, but then the two narrators are a twin and another woman. So there's just this doubling and doubling and doubling. And then also split. One of the twins, in Gaza Weddings, is killed, and the second twin refuses to tell any of her friends or family which one has died, and so she assumes she takes on and preserves in a way both of the young women's identities and inhabits both, because she kind of refuses to be limited by the loss of another thing. And the idea was very profound, but also I found really helped read and address and answer some of the other questions, right? Like, why have a book that is two books in one and then split it? So you have this relationship between place where they are once sort of, it is once one place. I mean, we think about, for example, the West Bank and Gaza, right? They are geographically separate, right? And the novel, two sort of bound locations, but that are actually very much networked together, that are, he describes the two girls in Gaza Weddings as a fulbin that's split. And so this notion of bodily distinct, but in spirit the same and connected. And if you destroy one may be destroyed, but actually the spirit of that thing lives on and is carried on within sort of all the other parts. This idea of many in one and one in many really just translates and transfers across the whole of the Palestine comedies and the balconies, right? This idea that you have, that these things are all connected. And in novel Palestine, I call both sort of part of one bigger project called the Palestine Project. And so all of these things are in spirit connected, but often in body or temporally split. But that one, and you know, it goes back to his comment of like, they're all about Jerusalem. So that, you know, the nuggets of all of them are contained in the others. And so you can read any of them and you've already read a chunk of the series and you don't have to read all of it because all of it's in one sort of poetically. And so this is what, when I have a chapter, the second chapter is on Al-Muthanna, to try and unpack and follow and show how this is achieved within the text and how it makes a really powerful, poetic, and I think useful way of thinking about the relationship between space. So often Palestine gets called like the nation of fragments. But that, you know, it has so many implications around being broken and being not full or not complete. And yes, of course, like the project of Palestine is not complete. Like there is so much that is broken and hurts, but this is what it is. And it has a hugely painful past and present and hopefully not future, but it doesn't mean that as a community, it is not full and cohesive, you know, and bringing those losses, bringing those absences forward is part of what it is rather than meaning that it is a broken entity. And so it's just, I found it such a powerful way of understanding that and describing it. But it is one of my sort of favorite bits in the book.
Thank you so much, Nora. And coming to the last question, what are you still working on Ibrahim Nasrallah, or what are your next projects are going to look like?
I had to draw a line. Nasrallah was my entire world for about 10 years. And we are still in touch, and I am still doing a little bit of translation here and there on his work. But I've paused on reading his text just because I need to catch up on all the other stuff that's been written. And I still sort of collect them as I can and get folks to bring them back. So when I'm ready to go finish the series, I will, they're all to hand. But I've put a pause to focus on some other projects. And so I haven't read, he published a trilogy into the Palestine comedies, and I haven't, that's where I've paused. But I really would love to read it. So it's a desire to continue, because I think the worlds that he conjures up in his texts are so, so wonderful, so delicate, so enriching. The questions that came up in trying to analyze the texts, particularly around trauma, which is what I've been working on really since 2019, sort of stopping and going, and then of course having to, you know, continue to work on this project to make it into a book. It's been nice to focus fully on, you know, especially now. The book came out October 31st at a difficult time, and we're still in the difficult time, and so it's been nice to see that the book come out and feel like it's another sort of, it's something that is building, something that is there and is a thing amid just a context of so much destruction. And so the project on trauma and on understanding what harm and its, not necessarily resolution, but harm and its redress, what does that mean? Has never felt so important. And so it's nice that the book is there and can circulate in the world without me for a little while I try and do some other work.
Thank you so much, Nora, for your time and for being on the podcast today with us.
Thank you so much for having me.